Hello, I'm Tony Cotillo. This is number 0533, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0533. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, science writer Andrew Fazekas, the night sky guy, is back to talk about the U.S. Air Force's mystery unpiloted shuttle. It just made history with the longest continuous flight without landing, 780 days in orbit.
They're being very coy, obviously. The United States Air Force doesn't really want to reveal, you know, all its secrets. But, it does let people know they're very proud of the fact that these kind of mini unmanned space shuttles are really setting records in terms of longevity in space and being pretty much autonomous, we think, in their mission.
Renee Baker, author of Defeating Scrooge, about being in the holiday spirit with caroling. Keeping the holiday spirit year-round helped her to regain the spirit she lost.
I put myself on a journey. I made a goal that I would study a carol a week for a whole year. But looking at them in ways I never had before, you know, like, who wrote them? Do we even know? Some of them are ancient, you know. When were they written? Do we know? Where were they written? Who was the intended audience? What inspired the carol? And how has that carol inspired people since it was written? And the very first week, I got goosebumps just now all over again, because the very first week I set out on this journey, I got my spirit back immediately.
Theme park expert Pete Trabucco is back to talk about the largest indoor theme park and mall in North America, which is about to open in New Jersey.
This will be the first park that's going to be a Nickelodeon, which they have at the Mall of America, which is going to be an amusement park, but it's also going to be, well, it will be when it's fully completed, the absolute largest mall in the United States. It will just top off at about 3 million square feet, and just can't wait to tell you all the stuff that's going to be in there. It's just amazing.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0533, was PR specialist Tony Cotillo, who runs Rise and React Media. He has helped to book many guests on this show in the past, so we thank him for that. And he's also been a guest himself because he's a sport expert as well. So there you go. Thank you very much, Tony, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. By the way, you can find out more information about Tony's business by going to his Facebook page, and you'll find the link to the Facebook page on our page at thestufffile.com. Just look for the show number that Tony just mentioned. See how it all comes back in full circle? Yeah. Again, thanks, Tony, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? After 6 years of litigation, six men were found guilty of attempted murder in late October in Jiangxi, China, for participating in a chain of subcontracted murder-for-hire plots that never resulted in a death. Businessman Tan Yuhi started the chain by hiring a hitman to take out a rival identified only as Mr. Wei. That hitman then subcontracted a second hitman to do the dirty deed. Hitman number two subcontracted with hitman number three, who then reached out to hitman number four. After getting the nod from number four, hitman number five, Ling Xianxi, decided on a different scheme. He contacted the target, Mr. Wei, and proposed they fake the murder and take the cash, which at this point amounted to 100,000 yen. Wei agreed, then reported the case to the police. Tan and the five hitmen will serve sentences ranging from 31 months to 5 years. So it is true, no matter which country you're talking about, it's so hard to get good help these days. 23-year-old Miguel Angel Reyes Avila of Half Moon Bay, California, waited patiently until his neighbors took their dog for a walk on October the 6th, then pounced. Reyes Avila then allegedly entered their home through an open window and lifted about $4,000 worth of jewelry, plus the keys to their 2009 Mitsubishi. When the neighbors returned home and found their car gone, they called police, who asked neighborhood folks to share their security footage. Most helpful was the video from Reyes Avila's own home provided by another resident who was happy to help law enforcement. The camera caught a suspect driving away in the car, and Sheriff's Office spokesperson Rosemary Blankswade said, "Officers recognized Reyes Avila from earlier incidents and arrested him on October the 10th on charges of felony burglary and grand theft auto." Wow, ain't crime tough when you're turned in to the authorities by your own house? Yeah. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a Croatian man known as the Penis Collector has been arrested for allegedly abusing his position as a hospital nurse to amass a large collection of human organs taken from the bodies of dead patients. The unnamed 52-year-old man who worked as a registered nurse at a city hospital in Slavonski Brod was arrested last week on charges of disturbing the deceased. In his apartment, police found glass jars full of penises, or would that be peni, preserved in formaldehyde, presumably pickle jars. A hospital spokesperson said, "On behalf of all employees of the hospital, I have to say that we are very unpleasantly surprised by an event that threw a shadow over this hospital. Our apologies to families of the deceased." According to reports, the suspect is a family man with no previous criminal record. It's not clear what led police to the man and his morbid collection. However, if I were to guess, my thoughts would head toward all the penisless corpses that showed up after his shift. Okay, everyone within the sound of my voice who can hear this, think of all the people you know, be they friends or family, or even look inward towards yourself. Suddenly, anybody's hobby collection that you can think of doesn't seem so weird now, does it? And by the way, the suspect is a family man. What the heck does his family have to say about his collection? Where did he store them? Were they on specially made shelves or on the mantle? Did the family have any idea of what he was stashing away? This is not a time when I want to hear some collector say, got 'em, need 'em, need 'em. Yee. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Recently, the U.S. Air Force's unpiloted X-37B space plane landed back on Earth after a record 780 days in orbit. It was the fifth ultra-long mission for the military's mini-shuttle fleet. But to the general population, it's still a mystery mission. To talk about it, we have Andrew Vizakis, the night sky guy. Andrew is a member of the Royal Astronomical Society of Canada and the author of National Geographic's Backyard Guide to the Night Sky. He joins us via Skype from right here in Montreal. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Peter.
Well, I know that this is all secret, and I always know that you know everything. So let's just go on the assumption that you can't tell us what you know. But what do you know?
Well, they're being very coy, obviously. The United States Air Force doesn't really want to reveal, you know, all its secrets. But, it does let people know. They're very proud of the fact that these kind of mini unmanned space shuttles are really setting records in terms of longevity in space and being pretty much autonomous, we think, in their missions. Now, they have revealed a little bit in the sense that they are releasing small miniature satellites. Now, you have to remember, this is quite a bit smaller than the manned space shuttles. We're talking about shuttles that have a cargo bay that is about equal to a flatbed pickup truck. And so with that limited space, they can't really release large communication satellites and things like that. But in today's world, we're talking a lot about small, tiny nano satellites that are no bigger than, say, a bread box. And the assumption is that those are the things that it's testing, conducting experiments that really advance space exploration using these new age technologies, especially miniaturized technologies. So with that said, I would think most likely a lot of it is like spy satellite kind of possibilities that we're talking about, being able to maneuver the spacecraft silently in certain parts where a normal satellite would not be able to be taken to. With this space plane, they can pretty much go wherever they want, spy on whatever part of the world they like.
Now, you mentioned that the cargo bay is much smaller. There was a picture of the shuttle when it landed, and it's hard to tell by the scale of it how much, I mean, it looks like the shape of what we saw as the old shuttles, but I can't get a fix on how the scale is. Just how much smaller is it physically than what we know as the space shuttles that went up that were manned?
It's a fraction of the size of the original shuttle. You mean you could not fit a human inside there. There's not enough space for that. The cargo bay is really just the size of a pickup truck, the flatbed part. And its wingspan is about 15 feet. It's about 2.5 meters high. So it's just a little bit taller than a human. And, you know, if you look at the photographs, it's really worth looking at it because it's eerily like the old space shuttles that we remember that were now, of course, mothballed. But this, by the way, what's interesting is that these unmanned space shuttles that we're talking about were actually developed by NASA to test new designs for future spacecrafts. And then basically it was taken over by the United States Air Force for their secretive programs from NASA. Okay. So this is really originally a NASA vehicle.
Okay, so again, harping on that size thing one more time, how can you compare it in size to any type of plane that we normally know of? Like, for instance, we all remember, especially us here in Montreal, when they were first testing the space shuttle, it would fly on the back of a jumbo jet. So we got an idea of how big it was in relationship to a jumbo jet. So what kind of plane, if you were to take a guess at it, would it most resemble as far as size? It's bigger than a Cessna, it's bigger than a Learjet, but not as big as a DC-8?
Yeah, I would say, yeah, compared to a Learjet in some senses, yes. I would say it's about that large. It's surprisingly, you know, small for what it can do. And that's what's probably gotten a lot of people interested in these missions, is that even though it's so small, how can it stay up for, you know, over 700 days now? And they're even thinking that they're going to be pushing. There is a future mission already planned for 2020 where they'll push it even longer. So such a small plane being able to do that. I mean, it is solar powered as well, which allows it to, we think, to maneuver itself while it's in orbit. But remember, it's not being refueled. We don't even know that there's no mechanism there for it to be refueled during its stay while it's up there for over 2 years. So the solar-powered, you know, ability is pretty impressive for it to be able to maneuver around. And if it is doing spying, if that is in fact what it is doing, being able to maneuver into where, as it's needed, wherever around the world there's a situation that needs to have, say, good, you know, some sort of spying, either maybe a listening or visual, it's very impressive that such a small Lear-sized, jet-sized spacecraft can be maneuvered through just solar power.
When we talk about spacecraft, basically what type of altitude are we talking about? How high is this thing from the Earth's surface?
That I'm not sure of. I didn't see that information.
Or you're just not telling us. Okay, fine. Keep your little secrets. Now, speaking of little secrets, You know, it's one thing. We're not quite sure what this shuttle is used for. Spying seems to be the most probable situation. But I'm more curious, actually, as to why they need something that can stay up over 780 days. And as you just described, are even pushing that envelope further in hoping to have one that can stay up longer. Why the necessity for something to be up there that long that's not something that's permanent?
Well, they have to probably these are just guesses, but I would say that, you know, outfitting it with new technologies as they're being developed. And that would require it to come down. Having this idea of having a space, basically a taxi service, of taking assets up into space, bringing things back down, outfitting it with new, packing it up with new stuff that you could take up. That's probably why it's the necessity of going up and down, because of new technologies that we're talking about, probably miniature spy satellites. I mean, there has been speculation that it's even a weapons platform. The whole idea, though, the problem with that, using it as a weapon, is that there's this fuel issue that comes up. And, you know, in order to stay in space that long, it also has to select a target. It has to orient itself towards that target. It's going to need a lot of fuel to do that. And that's really probably very prohibitive, considering everything, for how long it's up there. Maybe some folks I've heard thinking about that it's going to have the ability to destroy satellites. So if there's other nations that have assets in space that they need to destroy, then this would be able to do that at a moment's notice. Being up there constantly, 24/7, you could drive it into certain orbits and destroy other satellites.
That's almost like the bad CGI in Moonraker.
But I have to tell you, Peter, that we would not... I don't think the military could keep this kind of stuff very secret, because even backyard astronomers can actually track everything in space very easily. They can actually see it. And even, in fact, amateur astronomers were the ones that were first looking at these space planes and finding them in space and going, well, what are these? Because they don't match any of the database of what we know of. Even we know of the spy satellites that are up there. So the U.S. basically couldn't keep their satellite destroying activities secret.
Okay. Very quickly, because we just have about a minute left to go. Now that this has come back down, as I mentioned, it's 780 days. But this is the fifth ultra-long mission. As you said earlier, this was something that was designed by NASA way back in 1999. So how long have these things been in service? Since then?
Well, no, the first mission was in 2010.
Okay.
And so it's still pretty young, this whole ability of what they can do. And they really think they can push it more, a lot more than 780 days. I mean, so we may be talking, you know, four years that they could keep this space plane in orbit. And the question is, what would they be able to do with an asset, a space plane, orbiting Earth for years? It really makes you think.
And do we know if any of the other countries have something comparable?
Not that we've heard of, no. It looks like this is a part of the reason why they're keeping this close to their vest. They really don't want to reveal too much. And it's amazing already that, you know, that they've released photographs of it landing and taking off. We already see that, but there's nothing similar that we've seen anywhere around the world like this. Even the Russians, we haven't seen. They had something called the Buran back in the 80s. They were developing something to compete with the space shuttle that would carry humans. It looked almost identical to the old space shuttle fleet, but that was mothballed. They never actually launched it.
And in the meanwhile, there is not even a Revell model for kids to make. Andrew, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being on the show with us once again.
My pleasure. Clear skies.
Andrew Fazekas, the night sky guy and author of Backyard Guide to the Night Sky. You can check out his website at thenightskyguy.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0533. And you'll find links to his site and also links to either amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File Program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're experiencing The Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder. Sit back, relax, let it rattle around between your ears, tickling your cerebellum, and enjoy.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk about Christmas caroling and keeping the Christmas spirit no matter how early or late it is in the year. Pete Tribuco is back on the program. He is a specialist when it comes to theme parks, and he talks about the largest indoor theme park in North America, which is just about to open. We have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, and much more in Stuff File News right here, right now, on the Stuff File program, which is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher and TuneIn, and can also be heard via Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Just click on the Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify buttons located on the website at thestufffile.com. And whichever platform you listen to the program on, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciated. Well, let's start off this second batch of Stuff File program news stories with the Darwin File.
I am the Grim Reaper. I am death.
Gender reveal parties have become a thing in recent years. This is where couples expecting a baby will invite friends and family to a party and enact some novel way of announcing the gender of their baby. Sometimes it is pink or blue-colored balloons or maybe confetti. Sometimes it's a layer cake with a filling that nobody knows the color of until the cake is cut. One couple in Iowa decided to announce the gender of their baby by using explosives. Unfortunately, the stunt had tragic consequences. An investigation showed that family members put gunpowder and some colored powder inside a homemade metal stand that had a hole drilled in the side for a fuse. The idea was for the exploding gunpowder to shoot a giant cloud of colored smoke out of the top of the stand, but what they inadvertently did was build a pipe bomb. When the device was detonated, shrapnel flew up to 100 yards in all directions. One unlucky woman who was standing approximately 45 feet away was hit in the head and died at the scene. The sheriff's office released a Captain Obvious-like statement, reminding people that any time gunpowder is involved, there is a high potential for serious injury or death. Duh. Personally, I'm looking forward to about a decade from now when, at a family gathering, a 10-year-old child loudly announces, "Who is this Aunt Carol everybody's whispering about, and why do they always stop the conversation and stare at me when I walk into a room?" They can just pat that child on the head and repeat the mantra, "The tree of life is often self-pruning."
I have come for you. I am death.
Seventy-one-year-old convicted bank robber and career criminal Michael Jawernick received a jail sentence in Germany on October 7th, but managed to stall his incarceration by delivering a five-day-long closing statement that included anecdotes about his career in crime and details about his fitness routine. 20 hours into the soliloquy, the judge finally cut him off, saying she wished she had done so earlier in light of his excessive digressions. Jawornick, who wore sunglasses throughout his trial, told the court, "I am more intelligent and clever than any employee of the criminal police agency. That much is sure." Actually, what is sure is that he's going to be behind bars for at least 12 years, which at 71 is close to a life sentence. If he's that thorough in his soliloquy, just think of how he's going to bore the guards and his fellow inmates to tears. You know, sending this pompous, blowhard, self-aggrandizing narcissist to jail might be cruel and unusual punishment for everyone else there. Yeah. 21-year-old Cody Christopher Meter of St. Petersburg, Florida, entered a Pinellas Park Target store on October 22nd, where he sought a large Olaf stuffed doll from the Disney movie Frozen. Meter placed the doll on the floor and climbed on to have his way with poor Olaf, according to the criminal complaint. After finishing, he returned the character to the shelf and proceeded to the toy department, where he selected a large unicorn stuffed animal and repeated his offensive behavior. Meter was detained in the store and later charged with criminal mischief. Meter's father told police that his son, quote, "Def has a history of this type of behavior," unquote. Meter posted bond and was released from custody. Gee, I'm not going to touch any of the couch cushions at his parents' place. No. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, and another story in a somewhat similar vein, a drunk man filmed thrusting at a pile of leaves with his trousers around his ankles has been jailed for 8 weeks. 26-year-old Michael Golsorki abandoned the missionary position and scuttled away into nearby bushes after Premier Inn staff in the UK shouted at him to clear off. He remained hidden for 10 minutes before sheepishly emerging when police arrived at the hotel in Stockport, Greater Manchester, shortly before 8 p.m. on September 16th. Golsorski told officers he was mortified by his lewd act, which took place in a car park outside a beefeater pub where families were eating, having consumed a cocktail of booze, cannabis, and cocaine. Mobile phone footage of him apparently trying to have sex with a pile of leaves was shown at Stockport Magistrates Court, where he admitted outraging public decency and possessing cannabis. Well, this brings new meaning to the term nature lover. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? While some people are concerned about Christmas music creep, that is, playing Christmas carols on the radio before Halloween or American Thanksgiving, Renee Baker isn't one of them. Renee, who describes herself as a specialist in Christmas spirit, says now is the perfect time to lay the groundwork for your holiday spirit to take root. Otherwise, she says, people may be blindsided to discover their spirit is MIA in December when they really do need it. Renee, who is affectionately known as Mrs. Christmas, has managed a professional caroling company for decades, and she joins us via Skype from New Jersey. Hi, Renee.
Hi, Peter. Nice to be with you.
Nice to have you here on the program. We should also mention you're the author of Defeating Scrooge, How to Harness the Power of Christmas Carols to Revive Your Spirit Any Time of the Year, and also Defeating Scrooge Spirit Saver Calendar. So we're really in your wheelhouse right now, aren't we?
Oh, yes, we are. In fact, today I was leading a Christmas caroling rehearsal with my new group down in Philadelphia, and tomorrow I'm back with my New York carolers leading rehearsal then. So I am really, really in that wheelhouse right now.
Now, what do you say to people? Because, you know, there are always some who get very upset, and this is an ongoing battle as to whether Christmas music is being played too early, for instance, when you're walking through the malls or whatever, or the Christmas decorations are being put out too early. What do you say to that?
Well, I'll tell you exactly what I feel about that is I'm not a fan of listening to Christmas music on the radio earlier on in the year. I'm not a fan of seeing the decorations go up too early. But what I do, it was born out of, 1 year I lost my Christmas spirit. It blindsided me. And I found that to be really painful. And as a professional caroler, you know, not very convenient. I had to rely on my theatrical training and fake my way through the season all that December that year. And it was, you know what, Peter, it was a gift in ugly wrapping paper, because until that happened, I didn't know just how much my Christmas spirit meant to me and how I'd come to rely on it to sort of recharge my spiritual battery to start the new year with, you know, hope and faith in my fellow humans. But so after that terrible, terrible December where I had to fake it, that January, it was midway through January. I'd just taken the tree out to the curb. I was sweeping up the needles. And this is absolutely true. Under my nose was a box that housed one of my carolers' top hats. And on top of that box was one of my caroling books. And I asked myself, you know, what can I do to proactively tend to my Christmas spirit so that I would never have to go through another December like that again? And I picked up that book. And I opened it and I just thought, you know, what if the answer is right in here? And I put myself on a journey. I made a goal that I would study a carol a week for a whole year, but looking at them in ways I never had before, you know, like who wrote them? Do we even know? Some of them are ancient, you know. When were they written? Do we know? Where were they written? Who was the intended audience? What inspired the carol? And how has that carol inspired people since it was written? And the very first week, I got goosebumps just now all over again, because the very first week I set out on this journey, I got my spirit back immediately. And there's a few different reasons for that. But my point is that it's not so much that I want us to go door-to-door caroling or having them played on the radio. It's an introspective, quiet process that I go through to help tend to that spirit that then becomes my Christmas spirit when I need it. And working on that in a quiet sort of introspective way throughout the year, at a time of year when you really have no expectation of your holiday spirit, that is something that I have found has worked, and it's worked for others. And that's why I wrote the book, because I said, I've got to share this, because there's a lot of people in pain during the holidays for all sorts of different reasons.
Now, when you say harnessing that spirit when you need it, you're talking not just the holiday time, right? You're talking about throughout the year.
It's true. Yeah, you might need that Christmas spirit. If Christmas spirit is something that's important to you, and maybe you don't even know until you don't have it one year when you naturally do have it, you know, you can tap into it. I mean, I tell you, every week, well, nearly every week, I still do this years later, I'll pull out a carol. And at this point, I'm repeating carols, because there's so many different histories you can find and just kind of go down one rabbit hole of a history of a carol. And I just, every single time, I find myself uplifted and invigorated, and I can't wait to hear that carol when it comes about, you know, organically, like it gets to be late November or early December, and I hear it, and then I remember the things that I studied about it. You know, study is such a harsh word, really. I should say discover. And it just lifts me up. But I do find that I need that spirit mostly in December, because it's become like a crown jewel of my spirit, you know, my life, to have that unique Christmas spirit in December.
What's your favorite carol?
Aha! Good King Wenceslas is my favorite carol, and it has been for a very long time. And did you know it's a true story?
Yes, and why is it your favorite?
Because I love the spirit of Good King Wenceslas, who, when he was alive, was the Duke of Bohemia at a very young age. And he loved people, and he wanted to help people. He was raised, for some reason, he was a twin. He had a brother, a very evil man named Boleslas, or at least he was for part of his life. For some reason, Boleslas was taken under the wing of their mother to be raised, and Wenceslas was taken under the wing of their grandmother. And she was a strong Christian, so she taught him all about faith and hope and love and justice and mercy and things like that. And so he, being just a few hours older than his brother, or maybe even minutes, when their father died in battle, he, at the age of, well, it's a little bit disputed, but it seems to be 15, became the Duke of then Bohemia, which is now Czechoslovakia. And he set up his dukedom based on what he'd learned from his grandmother, Ludmilla. So it was based on justice and love and mercy. And he actually would go out. He loved the Feast of St. Stephen, so it's day after Christmas, and he would go out and bring meat and bread and wine and logs for the fireplace to the poorest people among his dukedom. And it's actually documented that it's true that there was one day he was going to go do that, and it was terrible weather, but it was the Feast of St. Stephen. And his men begged him not to go. They thought it was too dangerous, and he said, "No, come on. We're going to do this. Let's go." And so they followed him, and he did. He brought comforts to some of the poorest among his people, even in bad weather. So I love his spirit, and I think he's like a precursor to, you know, what we know as Santa Claus.
When you first started doing the research to all these carols, was there any particular story or any particular carol where the story itself really surprised you?
Well, yeah. Actually, the very first carol that I studied, in fact, I always pray before I start doing this, and I just ask God to show me what I need to see, when I need to see it. And that was the way I started that very first day. And I'm so glad that I did, because I opened my book that very first day. I just opened it to chance, and it was God Rest You Merry Gentlemen. And I've always liked that song. It's got a jaunty, you know, sort of rhythm. And it strikes me as sort of mysterious and upbeat all at the same time. But I found an article online, because that was the first week. I didn't have my collection of Christmas history books yet. And I found this article from a book about the history of that carol. And one of the things that this article told me was that there was a little known meaning of the word Mary. I mean, what do you think Mary means, Peter? What's your impression of that word?
You mean M-E-R-R-Y?
Yes, M-E-R-R-Y, like Merry Christmas.
Happy, joyous.
Yeah, and that's always what I've thought too, right? And this article, this book, was telling us that there's the medieval meaning for Mary was actually mighty. And that blew my mind, as I thought, what if we were actually wishing each other a mighty Christmas? How would we celebrate differently? You know, isn't that cool?
Absolutely.
And I read a few other things that have been misunderstood about that particular, the title and the words. And I was just on fire about Christmas being mighty, you know, and that just led me, you know, it launched me into this whole process that I now call my spirit saver process. And it was a long time after that, I want to say a couple of years later, that I found out that that meaning has been largely, in fact, pretty much entirely disputed. It doesn't mean mighty. But by then, it didn't matter to me, because I had already, it had been proven to me in so many ways that Christmas is mighty. And I still like the idea of how would we celebrate differently if we were actually trying to have a mighty Christmas? Because, you know, Christmas is strong, and there's a lot of power in the Christmas season to help bring joy to other people, to help bring other people into Christmas rather than pushing them away like so many people accidentally do. And I really love to meditate on the idea of mighty Christmas.
Well, we're just about out of time, and I want to mention your book again, Defeating Scrooge, How to Harness the Power of Christmas Carols to Revive Your Spirit Any Time of the Year. And I also, by checking your website, I noticed that you also teach people and share this information on how to make their Christmases and how to make their caroling a more positive experience.
Oh, yes, just to be able to, like I did, proactively tend to your Christmas spirit. And, you know, I give live workshops. Sometimes it'll be like a half-day retreat at a church, or sometimes it'll just be a group of friends in somebody's living room, maybe a book club. But I can't be everywhere, and so I actually created an online program as well that people, if they go to my website, they can see all about that. It's really neat. And also, Peter, I do have some free gifts for your listeners. If they'd like to go to that website, they can log on. There's a caroling book. You can't buy this anywhere. It's a unique, one-of-a-kind, and it has some of the world's favorite carols that people like to sing along with, and it's got an interesting historical fact on each page, and it also has a parlor game on the bottom of each page, as well as the carol words, and that's really something that your guests could download them, print as many copies as they want, and have carol books for their next holiday gathering, and give them away as party gifts. And the other thing is, it's a Spirit Saver calendar because when I was creating this process for myself, I kept looking for calendars to help me organize the process, and I didn't find anything that was set up that way, so I created my own. And this also has a sort of starter for people if they're wondering, you know, what carol to start with. It's got a whole list of carols, it's got the process, and it's a weekly process with little questions to help them organize each day's 2 to 10 minutes of their process. And that's something people can buy at Amazon.com, but your listeners can get it for free, the downloadable version from my website.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Renee, for being on the program with us.
Thanks for having me, Peter. It was fun.
Renee Baker, author of Defeating Scrooge, How to Harness the Power of Christmas Carols to Revive Your Spirit Any Time of the Year. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0533, and you'll find links to both of Renee's sites, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. And don't forget that at her site, you can also download a free caroling book for your holiday sing-alongs.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
Choosy mothers choose the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. If your mother didn't choose it for you, well, I guess she just doesn't love you.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about the largest indoor theme park in all of North America. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way. But I got a few more Stuff File news stories to share with you here on the Stuff File program, a show that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio, and also on Spotify. A team of Australian doctors said they removed a marijuana-filled balloon from inside the nose of a man who inserted the object into his nostril 18 years earlier. The doctors at Westmead Hospital in Sydney wrote in the British Medical Journal's case reports that the patient, a former prison inmate, recalled that his girlfriend had smuggled a small balloon filled with cannabis to him during a visit to the prison 18 years ago. The man said he inserted the balloon into his right nostril to evade detection. Despite effectively smuggling the package past the prison guards, he then accidentally pushed the package deeper into his nostril and mistakenly believed he had swallowed it, the doctors wrote in the report, which was titled A Nose Out of Joint. The doctors said the man, who is now 48, had the balloon in his nose for 18 years before years of sinus infections, nasal obstructions, and related headaches led him to seek medical attention. Oh, I guess he never thought to wonder why everything for the last 2 decades smelled like weed. This is another reason why we should do away with balloons. They never break down. And a 48-year-old truck driver named Cesar Schmitz of Enias Marques, Brazil, was just trying to make his wife happy when he launched an effort to rid their backyard of cockroaches. "She begged me to destroy their nest under the ground once and for all," Schmitz explained. After chemicals failed to do the job, Schmitz decided setting fire to the hole would work. So on October 18th, he poured a capful of gasoline into the hole and tossed in a lighted match. After a couple of misfires caught on his home security camera, a match landed, and Schmitz and his dogs were seen ducking for cover as the resulting explosion sent turf and lawn furniture flying through the air. The gasoline itself had ignited, but it had also set off the highly combustible methane from the bug's venom that had accumulated in an air pocket under the grass. "I wish I had thought this through," Schmidt said. He admitted it made a huge mess, but said ultimately his scheme was a success. The cockroaches are gone. You know, there's probably another side benefit to his scheme. I'm guessing his wife won't be asking him to do anything around the house ever again. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? The American Dream Mall in East Rutherford, New Jersey, has opened the largest indoor theme park in North America. To talk about that milestone, we're joined once again by Pete Trabucco, a travel and theme park expert. His latest book is A Personal Guide to the Best Amusement Parks and Water Parks, and he's on the line with us from New Jersey. Hi, Pete.
How are you doing today?
Just tickety-boo. It's a rare chance that we actually have a chance to talk about a park that is in your own backyard, literally, because you're also in New Jersey.
This is true. We do have Six Flags Great Adventure, which is one of the bigger Six Flags operations, but this will be the first, a park that's going to be a Nickelodeon, which they have at the Mall of America, which is going to be an amusement park, but it's also going to be, it will be when it's fully completed, the absolute largest mall in the United States. It'll just top off at about 3 million square feet, and just can't wait to tell you all the stuff that's going to be in there. It's just amazing.
Okay, so it's a giant mall, and within that mall is a theme park. First of all, are there a lot of indoor theme parks? I know there are a few here in Canada. We have West Edmonton Mall, but is there a lot of them? Is that a growing business?
That is actually a pretty much a growing business. You have to have the right, for example, if you're down in the southern portion of the United States, they don't really fly too well there. But if it's the wintertime, for example, like the Mall of America's got some really like 4 or 5 great rides there that have been opened up. You want to do that, but you need to have a big footprint. And in this particular case, the Meadowlands in East Rutherford was a great location to do that. I believe there are some places, there's actually malls up where you are in Canada that also have those indoor parks. It is something to consider, but it can't be the only thing that's at the park. You got to have other things, because when it comes to an amusement park, even if it's the Mall of America or this particular one, it's not going to be as big as even the big carnivals that you see because a lack of space. I mean, obviously, retail space is going to want to have stores and things that are a little more per foot that are going to be a lot better for the malls. So, and it's there, but this is not going to replace the major rides and attractions and roller coasters and thrill rides that you have all over the place. But it's a great place that while you're in the middle of the shopping and people are doing different things, that they can go and just have some fun. They're going to have a Legoland Discovery Center. They're going to have an actual aquarium at this location as well. And it looks like they're going to have and this is important because you're from Canada, indoor NHL-size ice rink is also going to be there, plus a full 18-hole golf course.
Well, you just mentioned size, and that's something I wanted to talk about. And you said that it was not as large as some carnivals that you might see. So for those who are trying to get a picture in their head as to just how large an indoor amusement park is, what can you compare it to size-wise that we can get a great picture of how much space one of these takes up?
Well, it's good that you asked me that because let's go back to the Mall of America, which is pretty much going to be similar to, that you're only going to have here. If you recall, there was a baseball stadium that was built in Minnesota. I believe it was Memorial Stadium. I believe it was. They played football and baseball there. Well, that stadium, the actual stadium itself, that footprint is actually what they use for the amusement park. So you figure 400 feet to 700, 350 or 375 to right and left. Home plate is actually right in the middle of, one of the rides that they have there. So realistically, if you picture a football or a baseball field, that's probably going to be the size. And when it comes to American Dream, it's going to be pretty much that size. Now, the difference is that with American Dream, everything is going to be glass enclosed. You could literally see the roller coasters through the glass as you're driving on the New Jersey Turnpike. You can literally see everything that's going to be there, which is totally different than the Mall of America, where everything is enclosed.
You mentioned it was in East Rutherford at the Meadowlands. In relationship to MetLife Stadium, where is it?
Literally, you could walk from this location to MetLife Stadium or to the old Brendan Byrne Arena, where the Islanders played. It's a five-minute walk, if that. In fact, if while you're on the roller coasters with the glass enclosure, you could probably look out the window and see Giant Stadium right in front of you. So it is extremely close. One of the big issues that they're having with this mall is that you've got the Meadowlands there. You've also got a racetrack there. And you already have a lot of traffic that's going out.
And to be fair, you mentioned Giant Stadium. For some people, it's Jets Stadium.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, it's always been called Giant Stadium. And even today, of course, it has a sponsor, but everyone knows it as that. And you're right, the Jets do play there as well, yes.
Okay. Give us some of the ideas of what will be featured, and what are you looking forward to as being someone who is a theme park expert? What are you looking forward to in this particular indoor theme park that you think is a real catch, a real draw for people?
Well, again, you've got to go back to the Mall of America. Remember, it's the same owners that are actually doing it, and Nickelodeon, the rides they have there. Now, you're not going to, and again, a lot of them have not even been built at this point, because remember, it's going through different processes at this point. You can see the track on some of them, but unfortunately they're not totally completed yet, and they're not expecting that probably till the end of the year if that occurs. But the type of rides you will find are going to be very similar to what Nick has over at the Mall of America, one of which is going to be like a mine train, which is your typical mine train that you find at Disney or you find where... Yeah, it typically goes about 30, 35 miles an hour. It's a nice family coaster, a nice ride. You'll enjoy it. And that's one of the rides that's scheduled to go on. The other one that I know of that is almost complete at this point is a ride where you literally do loop-de-loops, long loop-de-loops and elements and a lot of flips, but you're doing it in a very small, enclosed area. Obviously, it's going to be a lot tighter than, let's say, if you're outside at Canada's Wonderland or Le Ronde and did that. Another one is going to be more of a saucer type of a coaster in which you're actually on a slide that goes back and forth. And another one will actually be a ride in which it shoots you up the side of the track and then back down again. They're scheduled for four rides at this point. Believe it or not, they haven't even given names to them at this point, so it's hard for me to even give you that. That's really not something that they're really going through at this point. But the way it's worked out, and again, I know we talked about it being the biggest, they're opening it up, the actual mall, they're opening up in quarters. The first quarter is actually being opened as we speak. It's actually, the retail shops are there. They even have a skiing area where you could actually do some skiing down the mountain, which I think is very, very impressive. But overall, it's going to be, if you ever go into one of the Knicks inside, you'll find that it's a lot of fun. It's a carnival-like atmosphere. They try to get as much of the games and the rides as possible in there, and it's going to be a lot of fun once it fully opens.
8.5 acres is what makes it the largest indoor theme park in North America. So we know how much land it takes up, but what about height? And the reason why I bring that up is how high can it go for those to enjoy, you know, roller coaster drops and the like?
Well, you know, of course, it's a mall, obviously. And even though there are no height restrictions, obviously, if the mall is set up at certain points, these rides will not go above maybe 50 feet, 55 feet, something like that. But it will be open air, so you can actually see, even though it's glass enclosed, you will be able to see above you and of course, below you and stuff along those lines. Like I said, the mall itself is extremely long. I believe it's going to be 500-plus vendors in there. The thing about these type of rides is that they're tight. They're going to be very, very, not very fast, but at the same time, you're going to be able to do maneuvers quickly and in a very short footprint. Kind of like Batman, if you recall the old Batman rides. They were pretty wild, but at the same time, the biggest drop was 90 feet. It didn't go more than 50 miles an hour, but it turns you on a dime, right, left, and so on. By the way, they're also going to have a 2,400 to 3,000-seat performing arts center there as well. And, of course, the ski slope that I told you about. So it's going to be great if you get a chance. It is a destination location. And while you're there, why not go see a giant or jet can? How's that?
Absolutely. But, of course, they're not going to be playing most into the playoffs, as you know. So the only draw the only draw in East Rutherford will be that new American Dream Mall. Thanks very much for being on the program with us once again, Pete.
You're welcome. You have a great day.
Pete Trabuco, author of A Personal Guide to the Best Amusement Parks and Water Parks. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0533. And you'll find links to Pete's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. It's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
A quick-thinking employee of a Boost Mobile store in Philadelphia helped police catch a thief on October 22nd. The employee was in the store alone when a 19-year-old man entered, pulled a gun, and demanded money. "Can you wait a few minutes?" the employee responded. "I give you money. I have another employee outside, and he took the key. But after that, I give you," he explained. The robber agreed, and the employee left the store, locking the door from the outside and trapping the criminal inside until a SWAT team arrived. The frustrated suspect shot his gun through the glass door, but no one was hurt. Now, why? Oh, why? If you're robbing a place, would you let the person you're robbing leave said establishment with the keys because they said they need to deal with another employee who is outside before you can rob them? One reason, and one reason only: you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0533. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0533. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Apple or Google Podcasts, streaming on Spotify and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Void where prohibited, offer slightly different in Canada. For a complete transcript of this program, next time write down everything Peter says.